Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. There's horror in this hour later on from Suspense from 1944, but first a broadcast of Murder at Midnight called The Creeper from June 28, 1946.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Creeper. Murder at Midnight. On this program, we bring you the best and most blood-curdling stories ever written. And so now we bring you a tale which you may have heard before, a tale which we consider a classic in terror and suspense. The Creeper by Joseph Ruskall.
In the kitchenette of a New York apartment, a man and his wife listened to the evening news broadcast.
New York. The unknown killer called the Creeper has struck again, adding a third female corpse to his toll. Virginia Peters, a comely waitress, was found strangled to death in her third-floor apartment early this morning while her radio blared. As in the previous murders, a note was found scrawled on the wall with the victim's lipstick and the plea, "For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself." Oh. Police insist...
Now, why'd you turn it off?
Oh, how awful, and in this very neighborhood.
Let's hear the rest. It's very interesting.
Oh, you... Don't go turning that radio on again, Steve Grant. Heard enough, I'll go out of my mind, for heaven's sake.
That's it. A good, solid clue.
What is?
For heaven's sake. How many men ever use that expression?
Oh, shut up.
Okay, Mrs. Grant, pass the biscuits, my little pigeon.
Pass the biscuits, E.D.D. Three women in 3 days murdered in cold blood by a mad fiend right here in Washington Heights. I'm too sick to go out, too scared to stay in. The lock's broke. He sits there eating, eating, eating. Pass the biscuit.
There's nothing wrong with my appetite, my love.
Of course. That's what costs you your job on the police force. When I even think of...
Some men drink to escape. I eat.
Escape what? What?
An ugly tongue, a beautiful face, and a roving eye. In short, a wife.
So you're starting that again, you and your crazy jealousy.
Yeah, maybe that's the Creeper's way of escaping too, Georgia. Who knows?
Shut up. Go ahead and get a divorce. Go ahead. Can I help it if men look at me? I don't know why you come home at all. Where do you go? What do you do with yourself? Where were you this morning? Why'd you come back?
To eat. But someday I'll lose my appetite for that too. And when I do, my dear, there'll be no escape. And now I'm off again. Kiss. Still using stage lipstick. Wipe it off. How many times must I tell you? You're married now, remember?
Steve, wait.
Yeah?
At least go buy my medicine.
Sorry, I got no time.
But don't leave me here alone. Stay home this evening. Please, I'm afraid.
Oh, don't be silly, pet. Nothing will happen to you. You got a doorman here, an elevator boy, Mrs. Stone across the hall, a phone. You're safe enough.
But the night lock, it doesn't work.
Oh, now you can't lock me out anymore.
It doesn't catch. Something's happened to it since last night. Steve.
Get a new one.
I can't get a locksmith. I've tried all day. Steve, please. If I want to phone you, where will you be?
Out. Goodbye. Take care of your cold. Steve Grant. Huh? Well, if it isn't old Pearly Chase, how are you?
Here you got thrown off the force, Steve.
Yeah, I hear you got thrown off the news, Pearly.
You heard wrong. I wasn't fired. I was just warned.
I wasn't fired either. Just suspended for 3 days. Eating a lamb chop at Casey's when I should have been ringing in from the box at 162nd with all that trouble up there. On my way to headquarters now for reinstatement. I eat too much, my trouble is.
I drink too much. Hey, you're living up at the Heights, Steve.
Yeah.
That's funny. Me too.
Yeah?
Hey, you're married now to a beautiful and lovely young... with admiration.
Say it again.
I think I knew her. Wasn't her stage name Georgia Dixon?
Yeah, that's her. I love that wench, but... women. How does a guy handle them? You know, maybe the creeper has the right method.
Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth. Who's the creeper, Steve? Any angles?
You tell me and I'll split the reward with you. Say, what do you think of Inspector Bradley's inside job theory?
Nuts. Every janitor's a creeper? And as for that doorman Jim Ellis, just because he worked at two of the three murder apartments? Pure coincidence. Anyway, they've released him. One thing, though, and I don't think even Bradley's put it together yet.
Yeah?
In all three cases, just before the creeper struck, the door locks had already been tampered with.
You don't say.
You got a theory?
Well, sure. I mean, you take that note on the wall. For heaven's sake, in every case, for heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more.
I cannot control myself.
Right.
Oh.
Now, what man uses an expression like that? You want the lowdown? It's just this. A creeper is a woman.
A gimmick, huh?
Yeah.
Like the height of the message from the floor is a trick, 6 feet. And yet I'll lay odds the creeper's no more than a guy your height, say, or mine. 5'9", just like us, you or me. Only crazy.
Yeah. How do you figure that?
How do I figure lots of things? How do I know where the creeper's gonna strike next?
You do?
Certainly. The creeper's not so smart, he's just crazy. You'll play along crazy and you're one jump ahead of him. That's the trouble with Inspector Bradley. Why, he's up a tree. You expect logical clues from a madman? You play along crazy, make out you're the creeper. And what do you get?
Well, go ahead, let's see.
All right, the victims are all redheads, every one. You've noticed that, of course. 3 in 3 days?
Yeah, now that you mention it.
They all lived in the Heights, right? Agnes Martin, Jane Krutsky, Virginia Peters?
Right.
What was the number of the apartment in each case? Agnes lived in 1A, Jane 2B, Virginia 3C. Don't ask me the why or wherefore. Don't ask me the logic. Just play along crazy. See what I mean? Where's he going to strike next?
Huh? I don't get you.
The next victim of the creeper also lives in the Heights. She's a redhead. Her night lock's been tampered with. She's going to get hers today, and her apartment number's 4D. Well, why are you looking at me? Don't you like my arithmetic?
Curly, my wife's a redhead. We live in the Heights. And our apartment number is... You're just a boozy reporter.
Your apartment number?
4D, I told you.
4D, of course. It's pretty late, but I'll have it delivered. I was busy admiring your lipstick, Mrs. Grant. I've nothing like it in stock. 4D, I should have guessed it anyway.
Why?
Well, a face is a number. Believe me, since you've moved into the neighborhood, Mrs. Grant, for me it has a special number, like Double Dandy Delicious Dream. 4Ds, you see?
Go on. Bet you tell that to every customer, female.
I'm a ladies' man? Like the creeper? What did I say? What's going on in this block? Raw nerves, you can't joke. The creeper, the creeper, that's all I hear all day. It's mass hysteria. There ain't such an animal.
You don't think so?
I assure you, Mrs. Grant, it's a fairy tale for circulation of the tabloids. I'll send your prescription up with the boy.
No, I'll just wait here for it.
Well, it'll take some time. You should go right home and stay there if you're just getting over the flu. I'll tell you what. I'll deliver it myself. It'll be a pleasure.
No. I'll wait. I may not go right back. I don't want to be there alone. I'm afraid.
Very well. Suit yourself. Have a seat. For heaven's sake, stop me before I kill more.
What?
I cannot control myself. Wait! I was only joking, Mrs. Grant. Wait, Mrs. Grant, your prescription.
Mrs. Grant? Oh, Mrs. Grant.
Oh, Stone.
Why, yes. What's your hurry, dear?
I just got such a scare since these awful murders in this neighborhood.
Yes, isn't it terrible? Oh. I'm simply frightened to death myself. You walking home?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'll go with you. It's good we live in the same house.
At least if I had a double lock, but the night one doesn't work.
Oh, really? Well, I have a chain lock besides, and still
the way it is, I sit and shiver when there's a sound at the door. Can't get a locksmith. Tried all day, but they're all so busy. Mr. Frank on the corner promised to, but didn't know when. Why are they all so busy?
Well, my dear, because every woman in the neighborhood's changing theirs, too. Simply a nightmare. Oh, but don't you worry. We'll stay together this evening. Mr. Stone's out, too. Think of it, we've never visited, though we live right across the hall from each other. Isn't that like a big city, for heaven's sake? Or would you rather I dropped in on you?
Well, I don't know.
Well, make it your place, then. Isn't it horrible, the ghastly things they're saying? The theories one doesn't know what to think next. You believe the latest?
The latest?
That maybe it's a woman, the creeper?
A woman?
Can you beat it? I just can't imagine how in the world the police figure that, for heaven's sakes. Can you? I say, can you, Miss Grant?
I don't know. I was just thinking of something my husband said.
Though I can see where a married woman now, if her husband was faithless, well, I can understand such a theory, because they take my husband now. You've met Mr. Stone, haven't you? Well, Mrs. Grant, why on earth are you staring at me like that, for heaven's sakes?
I don't feel well. I must get home. I feel faint.
But Mrs. Grant, for heaven's sake.
Sobbing with terror, the woman with red hair runs up the dark street, back to her apartment and the door with the broken lock. As the hands of the clock move on towards 12 o'clock and...
Murder at midnight. And now, back to Murder at Midnight and The Creeper.
Back to Georgia Grant, hurrying hysterically through the dark streets towards the apartment with the broken lock on the door.
Good evening, ma'am. Oh. Out late, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, you're the... New doorman?
Just relieving Charlie. Nice night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very nice.
Here, let me ring the elevator for you.
No, you don't have to trouble.
No trouble, ma'am. There. Apartment 4D, huh?
Yeah. How did you know?
Doesn't take long.
When will this elevator come?
Coming now. Terrible things, ma'am. The happenings.
What?
The creeper. It's sort of...
Going up?
Yeah.
Up and down, up and down. The ups and downs of life, that's me. I'm a living milkshake, Mrs. Grant. Uh-oh.
What's wrong, Jimmy?
Stuck. Imagine getting stuck between the third and fourth with a production like you.
Get going, Sonny. You want me to report you?
Okay, okay. Can't you take a joke? Maybe I misconstrued that smile you always give me. Maybe you shouldn't ought to smile that way. Fourth floor.
Let me out.
If I drop in later, will you be more receptive?
Oh, home. Oh, thank goodness. I must be going out of my mind. Key. Where's my key? Darn this lock. Darn the lock.
Hello. Is the locksmith in yet? Well, I want to know how soon I can get my lock changed. Yes, I know it's late, but he promised. This is Mrs. Grant. Yes, 4D, yes. I know you just explained to me, but
hello,
I must...
Georgia?
Yes? Yes, so won't you...
I've
please...
been waiting for you.
Don't, you little fool. It's me. Do you want the whole house to... That's better.
What are you doing here?
Oh, don't worry. You haven't got a thing to worry about now. I've come to protect you. Give me the phone. Hello? Never mind about the lock, thank you. Sit down. Make yourself at home. Been waiting here for you. Long time no see, Georgia.
What do you want, Pearlie?
Me? A headline. Your husband wants, too. He wants I should keep an eye on you.
What's that?
Sure. You didn't think Steve and I were acquainted, did you? Oh, yes. From way back. Just met him at a bar.
I don't believe you. What do you mean, keep an eye on me?
Oh, just in case the creep...
Oh.
You heard of the character?
You're mad. You've always been mad, Pearlie Chase. Where is Steve? Why should he send you here? Why should he think the creeper will come here? What are you doing here?
Told you. Playing along crazy. Got a drink?
You're drunk now. And you're getting right out of here. You're nothing but a no-good rummy.
And you're nothing but a no-good... You finish it. When I took the drink, it was to drown you out, and you know it. I'm still a rum pot, Angel, which means I haven't got rid of you yet.
Get out!
You're a little two-timing redhead. You're all the same, you redheads. Even a wedding ring can't change you. Don't play the innocent. My business is snooping. I make a living at it, between drinks. So your new motto's love thy neighbor, huh? Mr. Stone across the hall? Poor, dumb Steve.
I'm warning you. Get out or I'll call the police.
Stay where you are.
Or, Pearlie, what are you doing with that gun?
I wouldn't pick up that phone if I were you. You see, there's a big reward for the creeper and a heck of an exclusive, and I don't want to share it. I'm riding a hunch. Now, sit down, darling. Just play along with me while I play along crazy. Sit down. That's it. Like we're expecting company. Let's have some music. Don't just sit. Let's have some music. I said turn on the radio. That's it. That's the good girl. Dance music. Let's dance. Give me your arm. Let's dance. Like old times. Around and around like my brain. Why are you trembling? I still love you, you little fool. Ask me why. I love you. I love you, you lovely redhead. I could kill you and you deserve it. Put the radio on, you could scream and no one would hear. I could put my hand on your throat like this and I could strangle you. Why are you crying? Stop it. I'm here to protect you. Stop crying. Cut it, I said. Cut it out. I can't stand it. I never could. Okay. You want me to leave? All right, I will. It's your funeral. What am I saving you for anyway? Where's my hat? In a few minutes, there'll be a knock or a ring or the door will just open. And you'll be lying in a pool of blood, like the other three. Goodbye, my worthless. Give my regards to the creeper.
What if he comes back? He wants to kill me. He wants to kill me. Somebody wants to kill me. I must lie down. My head is splitting. Trying to frighten me. Jealous spite, that's it. Like the other three. In a pool of blood. Like the other three, like the other three. Almost 12 o'clock. Any minute now there'll be a knock. Or a ring. Yes?
This is the doorman, Mrs. Grant.
Yes?
The druggist is here with the medicine. Shall I let him up?
Medicine? Yes, let it... No. Don't let that man up.
Want me to bring it up?
No. I'm perfectly all right. I don't need it, you hear? Don't you dare come up. Don't anyone. Oh, please, I must have it changed right away. My lock, my door lock. Yes, this is Mrs. Grant. Yes, I do want it. Of course, anyone can get in, anyone. They want to murder me, but I don't know who. It's the creeper. Oh, you'll come right away? Thank you. Thank you so much, but hurry. Please hurry or I'll go out of my mind. Oh, thank the Lord. Like the other three in a pool of blood. Any minute now, a knock or a ring. Oh. Who's there?
It's me, dear, Mrs. Stone.
Oh, what do you want?
I've been worried about you. Are you ill?
No, I'm all right, Mrs. Stone. I'm feeling fine.
Open up, dear. Don't you want me to keep you company?
No, thank you. I was just... Oh, stop that.
Do let me in, silly, and we'll...
No, please, go away. I'm going to sleep. Go away. You hear me? Go away. Hello.
Hello, Georgia. You all right?
Oh, Steve. Steve, I've been frantic. So good to hear your voice. Where are you?
At headquarters. I'm coming right home. Sweetheart, is anything wrong? You said
No, not now. Not when I hear you, Steve. I don't know what came over me all day. I've been imagining things. So silly. My nerves.
Sorry about supper tonight, honey. I wasn't myself. My job had me down, but now everything's...
Oh, of course. Forgive me, Steve. I've been bad, wicked. Darling, if you knew what I've gone through tonight, the most dreadful state. And then that... Steve, did you send someone here today?
Pearly Chase?
Then you did?
Yeah, to keep you company. Isn't he still with you?
No, I just got rid of him.
Oh, I wish you hadn't. He's an all right guy. Smart reporter. Lives in the neighborhood, too. Honey, it sounds cockeyed. I mean, Pearly's theory. But I was kind of worried when I got to thinking, so... Listen, Georgia.
Yes?
Don't let anyone in the house till I get home.
No, I won't, Steve.
Not anyone, do you hear? Not anyone.
Oh, Steve, wait.
What?
Wait, Steve, it's... thank goodness at last. Now I can breathe easy. Darling, just a minute.
Georgia. Hello. Hello, Georgia.
Mr. Frank?
Mr. Frank.
Thank goodness you've come. Please, step in. It's the lock on this door I want... Just a moment,
Georgia.
My husband's on the phone.
Can you hear me, Georgia?
Steve?
Yeah, what happened? There was something else I wanted to tell you.
It's all right, darling. Everything's all right now, Steve. You needn't worry.
Didn't I just hear you talking to someone? Was that somebody at the door?
No, it's no one, dear. It's just Mr. Frank, the locksmith.
Locksmith?
Cut a load.
Georgia, listen. Listen, Georgia. That's what I was going to tell you.
What is...
The police are on a new trail. They think maybe a locksmith. Georgia, you're listening. They think maybe the creeper's a locksmith.
Oh.
Get him out, quick.
What nice lipstick you
Georgia,
use,
can you hear
Mrs.
Me?
Grant.
Oh!
Yes. Very nice lipstick.
Georgia.
Very nice.
Can you hear me, Georgia? Georgia. Hello, Georgia.
Hello?
Hello, who's this?
Hurry. Catch me before I kill more. For heaven's sake.
Soft footsteps hurrying down the corridor, away from the door with the broken lock, now standing ajar, the body of a red-headed woman. And still, should she not have known that her only visitor would be death when the clocks struck 12 for
murder at midnight?
Murder at Midnight, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 28th of June, 1946, a syndicated recording. In the beginning of the broadcast, the announcer had mentioned that you may have heard the story before. It was featured on broadcasts of radio's The Chase, Murder by Experts, and the Mole Mystery Theater. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, from the year that our next star, Frederick March, was appearing as Mark Twain in a biographical picture, he now is in suspense in the play called Actor's Blood, heard on August 24, 1944 on CBS.
Now, Roma Wines presents Suspense. Tonight, Actor's Blood, written and told to us by Ben Hecht and starring Frederick March. Suspense is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness and entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Suspense.
This is the man in black here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to raise the curtain on a presentation unique in these weekly half hours of suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you a star of the first magnitude, Mr. Frederick March, and in person, one of America's foremost tellers of tales, Mr. Ben Hecht of Broadway and Hollywood, who will appear as actor and narrator in a suspense play dealing with a mysterious death and the twisted passions and loyalties of the world behind the footlights. And so, with Actor's Blood and with the performance of Frederick March, supported by Ben Hecht, from whom we will hear the narrative in the author's own words, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Do you remember Maurice Deleu? Probably not. Only students of the theater or people old enough to have applauded the heyday of Mrs. Leslie Carter and John Drew, and the theatrical didos of the Divine Sarah would be likely to remember. During the years I knew him, I saw him in harness but three times. Once in a revival, once at a benefit, and the third time was the occasion of the anecdote I've set out to relate. By that time, his only claim to fame was the fact that he was the father of Marcia Tillyhue. On a summer night in 1927, Marcia made a final exit worthy of the Tillyhue tradition. For weeks after it happened, old Tillyhue went around like the ancient mariner, holding with his baleful eye and his mournful song whoever crossed upon his path. But after a while, he too seemed to drop out of sight in the wake of his glamorous daughter, and like her, was forgotten. Then late one night, as I was getting ready for bed, the bell to my apartment rang.
Ben, I come with a message from the dead.
Indeed. Well, come on in and tell me about it.
Ben, do you believe in ghosts?
I've got nothing against them.
Good. I have just come from a miserable modern dress caricature of that greatest of the bard's plays, Macbeth. You will scarcely credit what these upstarts have done to Shakespeare's masterpiece.
They haven't altered the text, have they?
You recall the fourth scene of the third act?
Oh, yes. The scene in which Banquo's ghost appears.
Just so. In the folio edition of the play, the stage directions clearly read, "The ghost of Banquo enters and sits in Macbeth's place." In the foul production which I have just witnessed, the ghost does no such thing. It is an empty chair to which Macbeth shrieks his guilty line. "Thou canst not say I did it. Never shake thy gory locks at me."
An invisible ghost, eh? That's not so illogical.
Yeah, but what drama is there in it? How can we feel Macbeth's terror if it's an empty stool at which he shouts, "Avaunt and quit me sight! Let the earth hide thee! Thy bones are marrowless! Thy blood is cold! Thou hast no speculation in those eyes which thou dost glare with!"
The way you read those lines, sir, I have no trouble at all seeing the ghost.
Thank you. Thank you. Now listen. I am going to produce that scene in modern dress. And it's not going to be an namby-pamby production such as the one I witnessed tonight. I am going to give a banquet at my home, and there is going to be a place set at the table for my daughter, Marcia.
Look, Maurice, I'm very fond of you,
now,
but...
You are wondering why, aren't you? Ah, Ah, my boy. Like Hamlet, I am but mad north-northwest. The empty place at the table will be purely symbolic, I assure you. No apparitions will appear, not to you and me, at any rate. I cannot guarantee what my daughter's murderer will see there.
Marcia's murderer will be there?
They will all be there. All who loved her and all who hated her. And woe to the hand that shed this costly blood.
But if you know who the murderer is, why didn't you go to the police and tell them?
Police? My daughter, sir, would not have wanted so crude and sordid an epilogue to her life story. Like her father before her and my parents before me, she had actor's blood in her veins. Ah! She shall be avenged, my friend. But it will be no affair of handcuffs and policemen. I'll not go whining on Marcia's behalf among the cigar butts and cuspidors in some precinct station. No. No, her murderer shall be unmasked at a mighty banquet. On Friday next, at 8:30, curtain time, my friend. I'll see you there.
Yes, yes, I'll be there. Rained on that Friday night. Thunder rolled in the sky, and the streets were full of that picnic-like confusion which storm brings to the city. Waiting under the hotel awning for a taxi, I was rather thrilled at the prospect of old Dillieu's dinner, for his intention was plain, to assemble a company of suspects in the murder of his daughter, Marcia, and he was obviously going to climax the evening by some formal accusation of guilt. I knew pretty well who the suspects were, and I suppose I was one of them. Alfred O'Shea would be there, of course. Alfred O'Shea, the man who had written Marcia Tilliou's first successful play and her last. Broadway had its own private joke about the title of the last. It was called Forgotten Lady. It was after the final curtain of the last performance of Forgotten Lady that Alfred O'Shea chose to tell her. Marcia told the story at the time as a joke on herself.
Hello, Marcia.
Oh, why, darling, you waited for me in my dressing room like old times. I'm touched, really touched.
Look, sweetheart, you're off stage now, so cut the Bernhardt. You know why I'm here.
I do.
All right, I'll say it again. I'll say it for the last time. I want a divorce. I want to marry Rina Krasnov.
I want to marry Rina Krasnov. Oh, such a bad line. And from such a great playwright. No, dear Alfred. Not for her. It'd be too belittling a successor. Oh, can't you see, darling, after all we've been to each other, it's like Pygmalion wanted to trade in his beautiful Galatea for a wooden Indian.
Well, it's no dice, huh?
No dice, Alfred. No divorce. Not as long as I live. Now, be a darling and help me out of this dress.
Okay, Marcia. You just made your own bark.
Huh. Well, you can come out from behind that screen now, Father.
How did you know I was there?
Your asthma, darling. I'm glad you're here, even if you are a perfectly fiendish old eavesdropper. Here, you can unhook me. And that... Swine refused to.
I warned you against marrying that jackanapes of a playwright.
Oh,
Marcia.
Father. You're saying I told you so. And what I wanted was to weep on your shoulder. Ouch!
Oh, I'm sorry. Look here, Marcia. What are you going to do about this career of
yours? Now, darling, please don't go into that old routine about my being the last scion of the royal family of the American theater. I'm nothing but a combination of your name and the playwright who specializes in shallow, brittle female leads that enable me to get applause by simply acting myself.
Marcia, I won't allow you to speak this way about yourself. You're a great artist.
Oh.
You have taken your place in the great tradition of the stage beside the immortal figures of Rachel, Siddons, Bernhardt, Modjeska. Marcia, let O'Shea go. He was never worthy of you. Play Juliet next season. Show them you don't need a fashionable playwright and tailor-made parts to succeed. Show them you have actor's blood.
Actor's blood? Actor's blood? I'm sick of hearing about it. Just because you and Mother thought it was cute to stick me out there behind the footlights at the age of 5. Because you never had any real life. Didn't see any reason why your daughter should have. I'm supposed to have active blood.
All right. I'm only thinking of you, Marshal. Only of you. But that O'Shea is a hot-headed Irishman. He came very near to threatening your life when you refused to do as he asked.
Good. I wish he would kill me. I'm sick of the whole rotten business.
Yes, O'Shea was a suspect. He would be at old Tillyhue's dinner. He would be seated across the table from the empty chair. And would he see a Banquo's ghost of Marcia Tillyhue? But O'Shea would be in a goodly company of suspects. Fritz von Klauber would be there for sure. Fritz von Klauber. Not a man I should have liked to have as an enemy, that. Abnormally sensitive to insult, von Klauber was possessed also of an impenetrable Prussian stupidity. His first American production was a play called Jubilee for Spring, and Marcia Tillyhue starred in it. It was the most sensational flop of the Broadway season. After the first night performance in the 21 Club, Marcia held her own private autopsy on von Klauber's dead turkey.
You see, darling, Mr. von Klauber, my esteemed producer, loves his turkey farm so much he sometimes forgets he's on Broadway.
Terrific, Marcia. How about that for my column?
Huh? Sure, Walter, anything at all. It's all yours. Exclusive.
Marcia. Von Klauber, he's over there at the next table. He's heard every word.
Good. Let him hear. He's going to hear from me in the morning anyway when I start looking for a new producer.
Go ahead, my sweet Marcia.
Go to it. Rag me in public. I could kill you for this, do you hear? I could kill you.
Oh, you could, darling. Well, if my beloved husband doesn't do me in as he keeps threatening to do, perhaps I'll ask you to oblige. I may yet be spared the nuisance of doing the job myself.
Marcia, I forbid you to talk like this.
Sorry, Father. It must be the actor's blood cropping up again.
Yes, von Klauber would surely be present at Tillyhue's ghostly dinner. As I got into the taxi and gave the driver Tillyhue's address, my mind was still turning upon the terrible question that I was confident would be answered tonight. The question, who killed Marcia Tillyhue? Third on my list of suspects was a character named Maurice Stein. A one-time racing tout and small-time gangster, Maury turned his brilliant, if slightly frightening, talent to flesh peddling. That is to say, he was a theatrical agent. Marcia did two shows under his management, both of them flops. It wasn't her fault. There was no belittlement of the name Tillyhue. It was still an electric sign, but growing ghostly, slipping still aglow into the side streets of fame. Maury Stein was Marcia Tillyhue's last substitute for love.
Maury, will you stop staring at the door?
Let's get out of here.
Oh, relax. This is a charming room. I like it here.
Look, chick, I said let's get out of here. Understand?
Perfectly. I understand that Mrs. Maury Stein may come walking in that door. Perhaps she'll put two and two together about us. That'd make you sad, wouldn't it?
No.
Because you signed over all your money to your good wife. And if she gets any ideas, she may cut you off without a dime. And then where would you...
Shut up!
You know, I've half a mind...
Did you hear what I said? Shut up! You ever so much as a... Oh, pick up your coat. We're gone.
Maury, you are a worm. A despicable, slimy little worm.
Sister... Nobody talks to Maury Stein like that and gets away with it, see? Nobody.
There was to be one more opening night in Marcia Tillyhue's career. And, ironically enough, the three men she had cause to fear most of all her enemies were doing the honors. O'Shea had written it, von Klauber was the producer, and Maury Stein had put up the money. I arrived backstage at the Broadhurst at 8:20 to find the three of them in hysterics. 10 minutes to curtain time, and no Marcia. I found old Tillyhue sitting in her dressing room, nursing a sprained ankle and very upset.
I'm worried. For the first time, I'm really worried about Marcia.
What's the matter?
I don't know. We've been calling her hotel since 6 o'clock. She refuses to answer the phone. Ben, go over there. You're the only one she'd listen to. No Tilly, you has ever missed a performance, and Marcia, of all people, must not be the first. It's those villains out there who've done this, spreading insidious poison like Iago, tearing at her heart with their fangs until she's afraid to go on. Go, Ben, try to reason with her.
Okay, Pop, I'll do my best to bring her back. I trotted the 3 blocks to Marsh's hotel. The clerk at the desk met me with a dead fan.
No, Mr. Heck, Miss Tilly hasn't come down yet. No key in her box.
I took the elevator up. I turned left and walked down the corridor. I knocked on the door. No answer. Tried the knob. The door opened. And then it all added up. Yes, it added up. To a gaudy room in shambles, mirror smashed, perfume bottles shattered, the portrait of Marcia's Pierrette cut to ribbons. And finally it added up to Marcia herself, cold and white and terribly beautiful, lying there on the bed with 3 round bullet holes in a neat triangle just over the heart. There was no mistaking it. Marcia Tilliou was dead, murdered. That was the sum total of the addition I was doing in my head as I rode in a taxi the 20 blocks from my hotel to old Tilio's house on West 84th Street. Maybe I added it up wrong, but I felt sure I hadn't. I was even more certain when I saw old Tilio standing there at the head of the table to greet the guests he had assembled on the promise of revealing the identity of Marsh's murderer. Promptly at 8:30, he made his entrance. He has brought a stranger into the room with him.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for waiting so patiently. I trust you found your mutual company not too tiresome. I should like to introduce my guest of honor. May I present Mr. Carl Schuttler of the District Attorney's Office.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen?
Now, if you will all be seated, the place cards are plainly marked. Please do not disarrange.
There you are, Rita.
Thank you, Ed.
I see we are one short. And who, may I ask, is that empty place for? Banquo's gold?
That, my dear Mr. Van Klaber, is for a beloved guest. Known to all of you.
Beloved guest, huh? Let's see now. Well, hey, listen to this. This seat has indeed been reserved for one known to all of us.
Who is it?
It has been reserved for Marcia Tilliou.
Please, I'd like to change my place.
Go on, sit down, Rena. Marcia was much too sensible to play ghost.
I am an old actor. With the audience seated and the curtain up, I find it hard to wait. Art is long, but time is fleeting. And there is one who bids me speak. Love, hear thou. How desolate the heart is ever calling, ever unanswered, and the dark rain falling then as now. You are wondering if I really believe my daughter Marcia is present in this galaxy of her friends. It may be the wandering wits of an old man, but I see her sitting there, tragic and beautiful, about her the sound of rain and of sweet bells jangling out of tune. Forgive me. You've not come tonight to hear a doting father spread his miseries before you, but for sterner business, which, from your courtesy, your attentiveness, I feel sure you have guessed. Mr. Schuttler asked me to tell him this matter privately, but I refused, for you were all her friends, her honorable friends, and I wanted you present. Who killed my daughter?
Who took her life?
There's the question. I have the answer. Yes, Mr. Schutler, the murderer is here. He sits here, sir, among us now, at my table.
Shall I lock the door now, Mr. Tilly?
Yes, lock the door. Lock it tight. Leave no chance for escape. It's too late now. No power in heaven or earth can save you.
All right, Mr. Tilly, the door is locked.
My friends, is this not like a play? Your face is waiting for the name. The name of Iscariot. The Judas. That's it. Clear your throat. Fidget, squirm. Look about you. Who knows, eh? The villain may be right beside you. And who knows but that you may be his next victim.
Mr. Tilly.
I keep my promise, Mr. Schutler. I have the proofs, all of them, enough to send the murderer from this table to the gallows. The one who killed Marsha is looking at me now.
The blood on his hands. The terror in his eyes. I'll tell you his name. His name is...
A dagger handle protruded from old Tilliou's crimson shirt front. His eyes were closed. We carried him into the next room and waited outside while the doctor worked over him.
Mr. Heck?
I'm Ben Heck, doctor.
Oh, will you come in, please? He's asking for you.
Doctor, is he back?
The knife pierced the heart. He hasn't much longer.
Ben... Ben, is that you, Ben?
Yes, it's me. Who did it?
Lean over. Lean over so I can see your face.
There. Satisfied? Oh, something fell out of my pocket.
What? What? What is that?
That's a letter. I must have stuck it into the pocket of the suit the last time I wore it.
What's in that letter, Ben?
I don't know. I haven't even opened it.
But that's Marsha's handwriting. A letter from the dead. Open it, Ben. Read it to me.
Look, you mustn't excite yourself.
I don't know. When was that letter mailed?
Postmarked the 10th. Must have... in the day before.
Yeah, read the letter, Ben. Read it.
All right.
Yeah. What does it say, Ben? Read it.
It says... Dear Ben, this is to remind you of the opening at the Broadhurst tonight. I hope you will be there because I sincerely believe that this is one of the greatest roles I have ever played and I'm so anxious to make good in it because of Father's faith in me.
Oh. She cared. She really cared. What I thought.
Sure she did. And she'd have been proud of your performance in there this evening, too, Pop. You were great.
Why, thank you. Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Doctor. Doctor.
Yes, Father. Oh. Well, that's that. He was quite an actor in his day, wasn't he?
Yes, quite an actor.
How is he, Ben? What is he?
He's dead. I've got a letter here that will explain everything. It's a pity I didn't find it sooner. I haven't had the dinner suit on since the night of Marsh's opening. It fell out of my pocket when I leaned over the bed in there. It was written by Marsha Tilliou the day she died.
The day she died?
It says, Ben, I'm bored, tired, hurt, sick, full of nasty things. I'd stay a while longer, but death seems easier and simpler than life. What are a few pills, more or less, to one who has swallowed so much? Take care of Father. He liked you the best. For the last time, Marsha.
Suicide?
It's a suicide note. What about the bullets?
Can't you guess? The old man worshipped her. She was his star. But stars don't commit suicide. Only failures do that. So he fired 3 bullets into her dead body, slashed the painting, and wrecked the place to make it look like a crime of passion.
He must have been mad as a hatter.
No, he was sane. I think he really saw her as murdered by all of us. Her so-called friends who had let her down when she needed them most. Do you realize that old Barnstormer was playing his death scene from the moment he came into this room tonight? He'd rehearsed it in his bedroom for days, sharpening away at Macbeth's old toad stabber. He had his lines down pat. He staged its elaborate scene this evening and killed himself in such a way that we'd all be raked over the coals, not only for Marsh's murder, but for his own as well.
Well, it was a lovely piece of old-fashioned miming, but as fruitless a drama as I ever had the misfortune to witness.
You're right, O'Shea. The plot was full of holes. We could have helped him a lot with the construction, but it was a great last night.
And so closes Actor's Blood, written and narrated by Ben Hecht, starring Frederick March. Tonight's study in Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 24th of August, 1944, on CBS. Bringing the curtain down on this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.